I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
We will pay dearly as a nation for this thing going on. And possibly, if we were to stop all this slaughter, the judgment of God might be lifted from us. But it's coming, ladies and gentlemen. We just have a little taste of it in terms of the financial system, but it's going to get shaken to its core in the next few months, years, or however long it takes, and it will hurt every one of us. It's coming down the road, but at least we could repent and try to change. But the Congress has got to override a presidential veto, and if Obama sides with that, he is siding with murder.
All right, that's the 700 Club's Reverend Pat Robertson blaming yesterday's stock market crash on the sins of Planned Parenthood as depicted in those atrocious videos. I thought it was the Chinese stock market, but hey, what do I know? I wonder who Reverend Robertson will think responsible when the market rebounds as it is attempting to do, not as dramatically as I had, as we all had hoped, but it was up like 350. Now it's up 287, 294, 294. It's bouncing, but it's definitely positive. It's up, almost 2%. It's out of correction territory now, the S&P. That means it's not down 10% from the highs of about a month ago. So it's clawing its way back. Hopefully this morning's positive financial news from Wall Street will amount to a real financial recovery, not what is known as a dead cat bump. Dead cat bump. You can visualize what that means. You throw the cat out the window, it dies, and it just kind of thuds and rebounds a bit before it lays dead. Hopefully this is more than that. Hopefully this is an understanding that even the Chinese companies are not doing badly. It's the Chinese stock market and the crazy rules they have that allow people to borrow everything they possibly can to buy stocks, hoping that the stocks will keep going up the way they had been, 10% a month or some crazy stuff like that. The market broke. The Chinese market broke. Everybody panicked. Yesterday, you saw what happened. By this time yesterday, they were down 1,100. Then it was down 800. Then it was down only 100. Then it went back down 600. Today, up right now, 306. And hopefully that will restore some kind of sanity to the stock market. All right, you're tuned to 77 WABC. I want to talk not so much about the financial market, although I have one eye on it. And if there's anything, dramatic that happens, I'll let you know. A lot of people lost a lot of money. I joked yesterday, I have to work now till I'm 150. Now, if the market keeps going the way it is today, maybe I can retire at age 95 or so. But one person who's not retiring in any way is my friend and former Celebrity Apprentice boss, Donald Trump. Did you hear him yesterday giving former Florida Governor Jeb Bush the business over Jeb's awkward defense of the term anchor baby? I want to play Jeb's explanation for the term anchor baby. Crash, this is cut five. Here's Jeb Bush explaining that when he used the phrase, When he used the phrase anchor baby, tell me when you have it. When he used the phrase anchor baby, what he was really referring to was the birth tourism from Asia. From Asia. I mean, Trump mocked Jeb Bush's explanation of the phrase anchor baby, using the phrase anchor baby after he said he couldn't use it, it wouldn't use it. But what Jeb said, and this is largely true, is that the majority of so-called birth tourism is Asian in origin. That means that it's relatively affluent, pregnant Chinese and Russian women, and from other countries, obtaining legal visas near the end of their term, then coming here to give birth to what, obviously, because of the 14th Amendment, become American citizen babies. All right, here's what Jeb said about anchor baby.
My background, my life, the fact that I'm immersed in the immigrant experience, this is ludicrous for the Clinton campaign and others to suggest that somehow I'm using a derogatory term. What I was talking about was the specific case of fraud being committed where there's organized efforts, and frankly, it's more related to Asian people coming into our country, having children, in that organized efforts, taking advantage of a noble concept with his birthright citizenship. I support the 14th Amendment.
All right, so that's Jeb explaining, as I mentioned, that what he was talking about, anchor babies, are these tourists, birth tourists, who come, they register in a hotel in Miami. That's a favorite spot, but also in California. They come, they stay, they have the baby, then they go home as soon as it's safe, health-wise. So Jeb is right about that. Of course, that number, that 30 to 35,000 a year who are coming here to give birth as birth tourists, 30, 35,000 a year, that's about only one-tenth the total of the broader universe of anchor babies, the vast majority of whom, 300,000 or more every year, are born to undocumented Latinas who are already residing without the proper documentation in the United States. But this is what I want to talk to you about. That clumsy aspect of Jeb Bush's immigration explanation aside, I thought that he was very effective yesterday during his visit to the McAllen, Texas. Didn't quite get to the Mexican border, just a few miles away, but in McAllen, Texas, an area he knows well. You know, he was born in Texas. He spent a lot of his childhood in Texas, although obviously he and his brother very Ivy League oriented and educated. But he does claim Texas roots. And of course, his son, George P. Bush, is the highway commissioner or some kind of state official in Texas. And all of his kids, his wife is Mexican-American. His kids are fluent in Spanish, as he is. I thought that he was kind in his remarks. He was compassionate. He was understanding of the scope of the immigration problem, all sides of it. And I thought that by speaking Spanish and still insisting, as he did in a hard-nosed way, that immigration law be followed, I thought that Jeb Bush laid out a moderate course to address the problem that many of you feel is central to the presidential campaign. He sounded reasonable. He positioned himself to be a favorite of the swing Latino voters that the GOP contender crucially needs to win the White House. And he also pointed out that the Great Wall of Trump, that the wall that Donald wants to build would cost U.S. taxpayers north of $750 billion. So it was pretty, I thought, pretty even-handed, and I thought that Jeb Bush went a long way. I mean, Trump now is mocking him, and Trump's mockery, whether of Jeb Bush or of my colleague Megyn Kelly, is very cutting, and people laugh and republish it. I'll get more on that in a moment. But I think that people like, for instance, Charles Barkley, the basketball great, the commentator, he came out and supported Jeb Bush on issues like immigration. Here's Charles Barkley.
You know, the few times I've met Donald Trump, he's always been nice and cordial to me. I just think these immigrants, I think they're getting a bad rap trying to say that they're all out here committing crimes. I live in Arizona, and the Hispanics that I know are amazing people. They do work that whites and blacks don't want to do when there's 120 degrees in Arizona. Man, they're just really hard-working, amazing people. Do they have some bad apples? But so do whites and blacks. We all got some bad apples.
There's Charles Barkley sounding like Geraldo Rivera. I absolutely agree with him, and I think that Jeb has that pulse down. I think that Donald, by going to your anger over undocumented immigrants, even if that anger is unformed or not fact-based, it may be fact-based in your particular case. Usually it's not. I think that Donald is going for the low-hanging fruit, the cheap money in stirring up anti-immigrant sentiment. I'm not sure it works long-term for the Republican nominee. Gene in Brooklyn, what do you think? Thanks for calling 866-Geraldo. What's up?
Hi, Geraldo. I think that you have to look at the root cause. And the root cause, I think, is this administration is opening the floodgates not only to people in Central America, in Mexico, but also from different Muslim nations, from Ethiopia. In Brooklyn, we have so many different people that are new. They don't speak the language, and they're consistently being pregnant over and over again. And I don't feel that they are being pregnant by the same guy either. So the problem is, who's bringing in everyone that's undocumented? And you have to get to the root cause of this problem first. Because in America, Americans work for stability of their country. And the way this administration is flooding this country, it's going to bankrupt this country, and the Americans themselves will, not have a safe environment.
So tell me how this impacts your presidential preference, Gene.
Well, I know that Trump is very rough on the edges, but I think he speaks from the heart. It's for America, in America, for Americans in America. That's the difference. Who is going to pay and subsidize all this? This is a big problem. And the other problem is that the Catholic Church, with the Pope, they are pushing this through. Meanwhile, here in New York, you have so many churches. My mother's two churches have been closed down. She's 90 years old. She can't walk to the other churches. So Americans are suffering as a result of this administration and the Catholic Church pushing through their political agenda.
All right, Gene, I appreciate your feelings very sincerely expressed.
Every time I go on television, it's got to be live. It's live. I said, oh, can I have a rest, please? Tonight it's live on Fox. It's live. Who likes Fox? I like Fox. It's live on CNN. Who likes CNN? All right. And it's, oh, this is going to be a beautiful, and it's live on MSNBC, right? Well, they're still working. The reason I have this really incredible enthusiasm, and I really appreciate you, especially with this weather and this heat and everything else, but the reason I have it is because I do know what I'm doing, and I don't say that in a braggadocious way. You people are looking for somebody that knows what he's doing, whatever it is.
All right, that's Trump in that big event he had in Mobile, Alabama, Friday night, covered live by all of the networks, and a gigantic ratings spike when he was on. And he's really playing the crowd, and he does it brilliantly, and he gets vastly more coverage than all of the other GOP candidates combined. In fact, Trump is getting covered twice as much as Hillary Clinton is being covered, even though Hillary Clinton is engaged in that email scandal, such as it is, with the FBI and so forth. Still, Trump is getting far more coverage, and you might argue, if you were a Republican, as I am, that maybe the scandal should be getting more coverage than the flamboyant candidate, but Hillary Clinton is going to weather it. One of the things, Trump really, he speaks his mind and he lets no insult go unanswered. And I totally get that. The one thing that I am concerned about, I want to talk directly to Donald now from, this is your friend, Donald, boss, this is your pal. We love you. I mean, I've got my profound differences with your policies, but you are a terrific person, and I sung your praises and love the way you treated my family. I love the way you are with your own family. You run great businesses. But enough already with Megyn Kelly. I mean, you've made the point. This is going to be like the Rosie O'Donnell thing. They're taking it, you know, further than it needs to go. You made your point. You didn't appreciate the question she asked. But why do you keep attacking her now? Why keep pounding her? You made the point already. Now you keep it up, then you look like the bully, and that's where you lose the admiration that people have for you for fighting back. If you just keep it up, you keep it up, you keep punching, you keep punching, you keep punching. All right, already, we get it. You were pissed off at her questions. You thought they were unfair. You made that point. You know, it's enough. I don't like it. And I think that a lot of people who, you know, who maybe were cheering for you to fight back, and you'll show these reporters if they get, you know, in your view, sloppy or whatever it is. Okay, you did it. You said it. You did it. Now let the woman who's a constitutional lawyer, by the way, this is the furthest thing from a bimbo that you could get. Just let her do her job. You do your job. You both do your jobs. And you be the candidate. She'll be the journalist. And enough said. But to keep it up is, you know, it's unseemly. It's not the guy I know. Point is made. Okay. Now, one thing I want to say. Now, the Dow is up 270. So it's off the highs of the day, but it's still in positive territory, triple digits, and we like that. In the old days, when what the markets reflected was true economic news, we had some good economic news today. The board, conference board, came back and said that the index, this is just this morning, the index of consumer confidence increased to 101.5 in August, up from a revised July reading of 91. So it's 101.5 as opposed to 91, the best showing since January of this year. So that's good. And you also have housing starts, home sales. Home sales rose 5.4% in July, the strongest reading in 7 months. So home sales up, consumer confidence up. Let's cool our jets with the panic. Here's Charles in New Jersey. Thanks for calling, Charles. What's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, well, I'm a regular listening to your program. I'm calling about your last caller, talking about the Catholic Church and this administration. But I can't come to that. Yes, because I listen to Donald Trump at all time. I used to gamble in his casino. I haven't been in Atlantic City for a while, so I don't know if that casino is.
Charles, I tell you what, could you hold on or call back?
My second favorite book of all time. What's my first favorite book? The Bible. The Bible. And as much as I love the art of the deal, it's not even close. We take the Bible all the way, right? Okay, thanks.
Now, that Bible reference, you know, that's fine. Maybe it's literally correct. I mean, Donald doesn't strike me as a guy that spends a lot of time thumbing through the great work. Maybe he does. I take the man at his word. The one thing I don't like, though, and I have to say it, you can't, when you talk about immigration, why not? And it's the same thing in a broader context and a more cosmically important context as the Megyn Kelly thing. I get that Trump believes that immigration is the central issue domestically of the day. internationally, it's ISIS and China. And he may be right about that. Internally, he thinks it's the economy and definitely tied to immigration. And immigration is the issue that he has gotten the most traction from among Republican primary voters or prospective Republican primary voters. I just say that if Ann Coulter is your main advisor on immigration, then you're not going to appeal to a broad cross-section of the American electorate. I mean, let's face it. I know Ann for many years. In many ways, I have tremendous respect and affection for her. But I think that her book, Adios America, was really a screed. And for him to adopt it wholeheartedly is really unfortunate in my view. Like Jorge Ramos, the Univision anchor, very, very popular among Latino viewers. I mean, obviously his newscast in Univision is in Spanish. So Jorge is, I can't begin, there's no comparable English-speaking anchor in terms of the influence on the entire electorate. Maybe Bill O'Reilly comes close, but Bill is on cable. If Bill was on one of the broadcast networks, he would be, the second after the president in terms of his impact. But he's got plenty of power within the cable news world. Jorge Ramos, though, in the Spanish world, is proportionally even more influential than O'Reilly. And Jorge Ramos, this is a quote, "Trump is the loudest voice of intolerance, division, and hatred right now in America. How is he going to deport 11 million people by bus, by plane? Is he going to bring the army to do that? Can you imagine the human rights violations that would create? This is not politics or political for us, Jorge Ramos says. This is personal." So picture this in your minds now. So Trump using this fervent, impassioned, anti-immigrant stance manages to win the Republican primary, and he becomes the GOP nominee, as he very well might. Then how do you translate that victory among the largely white male Republican primary electorate into a general election victory, where in states like Virginia and North Carolina and in Nevada, with its crucial 3 electoral votes and 45% Latino electorate, in Texas, in New Mexico, in Arizona, in Colorado, in California. California's not a swing state, but you get my drift. There are 35 million, 40 million Mexican-Americans. They are going to be north of 15% of the electorate. If the Jorge Ramoses of the world keep saying that Trump is the loudest voice of intolerance, division, and hatred right now in America, can't you envision a scenario where Latinos, many of whom have never voted before, people who are apathetic to the political process, who have ignored the political process, but who are here legally, either citizen-born or naturalized citizens now who can vote in Florida, for example? Why would you intentionally encourage that kind of groundswell of new voters to vote against you? That's why I say to Donald, you can make these same points without sounding so harsh, without using phrases that seems to condemn an entire race of people. You've got to, I believe, that's why when I heard Jeb Bush yesterday, and you know how I feel about Trump, I love the guy. But when I heard Jeb Bush yesterday, first of all, speaking Spanish, which I thought was extraordinary because he was speaking Spanish better than I do. He's using the pluperfect tense. And I mean, he's really, he seemed elegant in his use of the Spanish language. He still is hard line in terms of you got to have security and the border has to be enhanced and all that kind of stuff. And yet he sounded
more compassionate, more reasonable, more attractive to me as a Latino man? Yes. Okay, I get it that it's a problem, but do you really have to, like, talk about drugs and rape and really, when the 90% of the situation is the delivery guy of the pizza at 2 o'clock in the morning in February on the bicycle, or the person picking the fruit or processing the poultry? It's like to be in a shed tearing apart chickens and guts everywhere and meat packing. It's no mystery that no American wants to do that job. Charles Barkley's right. There's no black or white American wants to do that job. You know, maybe if you paid them $50 an hour, they would do it. Then you'd be paying, then your Kentucky Fried Chicken would cost you $20 instead of $5. Just kindness, a little kindness. He's got that audience, that Mobile, Alabama audience already. He doesn't want to be George Wallace, does he? You want to be George Wallace? Remember George Wallace? Segregation now, segregation forever. You want to be that guy? You don't want to be George Wallace. You're Donald Trump. You're a New Yorker, for goodness sake. I've been in your building. You have Spanish people in every kind of job in that building. That's the Donald Trump that I know. So what do you want to be self-destructive? Doesn't make any sense. Here's Harry in Comac. What's up, Harry?
Yeah, listen, Geraldo, I think you underestimate the intelligence of a lot of the Hispanic people and black people who I see in talking to people. They're all in favor of Trump. They like somebody who they understand is a constructive individual. There's nothing constructive about a Bush or a career politician in the American government. There's nothing constructive. They've done nothing with what they've had a power to do since Obama's been in. Nothing have they done. And these people now are aggravated, just like the people who you might refer to as Tea Party people. And I'm talking about people I talk to. You know.
So who else do you like? Let me ask you the question. Aside from Donald Trump, who else do you like in political life, Harry?
Oh, well, we could start with the people who are conservatives, who are known to always sell books. In other words, a liberal can write a book and it sells 15 copies. You get a Savage or a Coulter or a Levin writing a book, and there are lines down the street at every bookstore they go to for a mile. And this is telling America something. This
All right, people- do you think that the candidate can win with the Savage, Levin, Coulter corner of the American electorate? Can a candidate win with the people that buy the conservative books? Are they enough?
I'm saying it's getting closer every day, yes.
All right, well, then it could be. That's the bet, obviously, that Donald Trump is making. Smart call, Harry. Thanks, I appreciate it.
Years old, that song. Today's its birthday. The Boss. And his legs still aren't tired. That's the 40 years of running. Just fabulous. A song that really encapsulated so much of the period. I used it as a theme song when I was looking for a job after I got fired from ABC in 1985. I used it. I put all my 2020 stories, all my adventures, and set it to that music. Must have worked. I got a talk show out of it. All right, what's on your mind here? It's a lot going on. I've got so much to talk to you about still. The market holding right around, I won't give you an exact number. I can't see it right now, but it's around 300. I'll give you a more exact number in a second. Here's Mord in Edison. Thanks for calling 866-RALDO. What's on your mind, buddy? Hello, Mort? No, Mort? Okay, snooze, you lose. Here is Omi in New Jersey. What's up, Omi?
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I have an issue with the whole the fallacy of hardworking immigrants who do what Americans don't want to do. I disagree with that wholeheartedly because, let's be clear, if you're getting paid off the books, you're not contributing to the tax base.
That's
not
true.
You're not contributing to the roads you use, the transportation that provides you access to your jobs.
Yes, you
or
are.
The trash that you accumulate and gets picked up. So you may be hard working because most of the money is being sent back to your country, and not just Mexico. I'm sick of everyone thinking that everyone is targeting Mexicans. We're talking about immigration across the board, whether it's HR-1 visas, work visas, and people that come over here and don't return, or we're talking about student visas when they come over here for the 4 years and don't return. There's an enormous amount of illegal immigrants in this country that we cannot continue to safeguard by their so-called right to be here because
so what would you do, Amy? What would you do
with them? Americans don't want to do.
What would you do with them?
That's just flawed.
What would you do with them?
Well, you know, first I would put a moratorium on immigration. No more. If you're here, that's it. We're going to have to figure out how to put them in some kind of it's an unfair question because there are people who are going through the proper channels that's in place.
It's not an unfair question. It's a reality. What would you do with them is the question.
I would deport them, and they would have the right to come back within 10 years. They would all be deported. That's what I would do.
They would all be deported. What about
all,
the children who
one,
are
and
citizens?
The ones that's in line that has done everything that they were supposed to do.
Right, I got you. They would all
papers,
be deported.
They would be brought in.
Okay, well, let's walk our way through this, Omi. This you sound like a very smart lady. Okay, so you would deport them all. What about their children who are citizens?
What about their children? If I go rob a bank and I'm pregnant and I have a child in prison, do I get to keep my child in prison simply because I committed a crime? No, the child is taken away from me and is given his place in the home. Same concept would apply to that child. That child would be, unfortunately, sent back to Mexico with the mother and be given 10 years or 17 years, and they can come back to the country when they're of age. They will be given right of access. But just because they're born here...
And how physically will you remove these people?
The same way that the FBI physically remove your property when you don't pay, with the IRS when you don't pay taxes.
So you see that scene happening 11 million times or 12 million or 15 million times?
The IRS can figure out how to get your property and seize your bank accounts and your assets. They'll figure out how to get you into one brigade and deport you lawfully.
And so you're going to see people like what, on buses?
Buses, trains, planes, whatever it takes.
That doesn't sound harsh to you?
No, it doesn't. It sounds harsh that you think that Americans should be the bearers of all of this debt. Okay, let's talk about deconstructing the Federal Reserve and
all right, you're getting into the woods now. I got it, Omi. I got it. Thank you. I mean, come on. First of all, the cost involved. Remember that picture of Elian Gonzalez? I mean, is America ready for that? I think it's bizarre. It's absurd. It's unrealistic. You're not going to deport everybody. You're not going to go into families where you got, five children. Four of the children are citizens. One's not. You're going to take the one who's not. You're going to leave the other four behind. Or you're going to deport the American. And then the four citizen children, they get a lawyer. So there's a lawsuit. That house has a lawsuit. The next house has a lawsuit. I mean, we got to be smart about this. I mean, it may make you feel good. I think it's sick. Some good news, some great news. Out of Citi Field, I still think of it as Shea Stadium. The Mets setting a team record with 8 home runs. With David Wright, the captain, lasting a home run in his first at-bat. Back from his injury since April. He hasn't been on since April. Mets winning 16-7. You have the damn call? Anyway, the Mets did good. The Yankees, poor CeCe Sabathia. I love the guy. We've worked together helping out the therapeutic nursery at the JCC and Tenafly. He's just a wonderful, charitable, big-hearted guy, the Yankee pitcher. Now he's going to the disabled list now. He's finished maybe for the season, which is too bad. Really too bad. But this new guy, Nathan Eovaldi,
holding Houston scoreless for 8 innings. The Yankees win the... All right, better late than never.
Swing and a fly ball deep to left. This is a Mets record. Way up off the facing of the upper deck in left field. A 2-run homer for Yoenis Cespedes.
All right, that's the Mets. 8 home runs. That's the team record. And the Yankees winning the pitcher's duel. 1-0. So right on to the American teams. I mean, the New York teams, listen to me. Market 2. Talk about America. The market up 341. So... it's improving on some of its gains. Maybe there's a bigger upside yet to come. We'll keep our eyes on it. We're talking, though, about Trump, talking about immigration. We haven't gotten to Hillary Clinton yet. We shall. But now, Mark, in Edison, what's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. I absolutely despise Trump. And I almost wish that, and that's because of his whole attitude, you know, calling Megyn Kelly a bimbo would disqualify anybody else, and some of the other things that he said. I almost wish that the Republicans would have the guts to say, you know something, you want to run as a third party, go ahead. You're not going to get it. We know that the Republicans probably won't get it. So let them invest their money in, I'll say, the Congress, and this way they can kind of stop whatever...
Hillary Clinton does?
Whatever. Assuming it's a Democrat, they'll stop Hillary.
Are you a Democrat or a Republican?
Not elected, maybe they could stop.
But are you a Democrat, Mark, or a Republican?
I have never... last time I voted for a Democrat was 1980.
Okay.
And believe me when I tell you...
Jimmy Carter.
I do not want to vote for Hillary. I may not vote.
You may not vote at all. That's no good.
No, it's not. But that's how much I mean, I think both candidates... are bad, but I think Trump is...
Well, I want to take apart some of your negative feelings toward Trump. Don't you believe that he is a good businessman? Don't we need a businessman running the nation's affairs?
I will say yes, but I don't know how much he's done in terms of, I'll say, overseas business. He talks about, I've rented apartments to China. Well, you don't rent apartments to China in China. You're renting them over here. So I don't know what his international experience is. If you want to talk international, you got Carly Fiorina. HP was definitely an international company.
But in 2005, wasn't she fired unceremoniously after the stock dropped in half?
Yeah, but that also dropped in half when everything else was dropping in half, because I believe you were talking about, I'll say, the Great Recession.
You did have a bit of a dot-com bubble, that's true.
Yeah, so, I mean... I like
Carly. I like the way she looks. I just don't think that she... can't compete against Trump when it comes to business acumen. I mean, I may be wrong about that. I like her, and I think she'd make a terrific vice presidential candidate. But what is it about his Megyn Kelly attacks that bothers you about Trump?
What I don't like, well, it's not just the Megyn Kelly. I'll say it's the Hispanic. And for what it's worth, I am so far from being Hispanic, it's not even funny. But you just can't talk as negatively as you do. And as far as the Megyn Kelly things go, if he thinks that she was tough on him, what if he's elected? You know that when you're the president, and I don't care if you're a Republican, Democrat, or an independent, the press is going to brutalize you. And what's he going to do, start tweeting to all the press?
Well, he has before. He doesn't let any perceived insult go unanswered. Mark, thank you very much for an excellent call. Doesn't let any perceived insult go unanswered. But what he will end up doing is alienating the people who love him. I mean, Brian Kilmeade on Fox and Friends is quoted in the Associated Press, and I love Brian, he's a dear friend of mine, that actually, this is Brian saying, that actually bothers me personally, and we are all friends with Donald Trump, but he is totally out of bounds reigniting that fight with Megyn Kelly. Brian said this morning on Fox and Friends, I don't know if he's trying to get ratings out of that or poll numbers, but he's not going to be successful. I agree, enough already. I don't want to... just keep flogging that, but I just want to say that, there is a point where the Fox family has to close ranks behind Megyn and just stand united against conduct that is considered rude and insulting that goes beyond the bounds of propriety. All right, enough said about that. I'm not going to mention it again. Here is David in New York City. What's on your mind, David?
Hi. Trump hasn't discussed his position on how to penalize American businessmen who hire illegal aliens. I personally think as an African-American, I just walked around Brooklyn all week long. I walked by five or six major construction sites. I didn't see one black worker. All the workers were Hispanic, slash, probably Mexican, South American. I mean, no one's hiring blacks. I'm in Harlem right now, in Black Harlem. All the store clerks, all the restaurant people are all Hispanics. You know, so blacks are being decimated by this influx of illegal aliens. And if there's no penalty for businessmen that hire illegal aliens, I mean, there's some businessmen with 20, 30 illegal aliens on their staff. So that indicates that not only are they breaking one federal law, but they're most likely playing hanky-panky with their bookkeeping and their profits. I mean, if an American businessman is going to have 10, 12 foreigners on staff illegally, just imagine how he's screwing the IRS and the New York State Tax and Finance Department. But my main point is the news media must get Trump to sit down and explain what is he going to do to a businessman, primarily white American businessmen, who prefer not to have blacks on their staff anyway because blacks want to be paid the proper wages. But I think that these businessmen should be sent to federal prison, a minimum of 5 years in prison for hiring illegal aliens. If you don't do that, nothing's going to happen because everyone's going to hire them. There are construction companies here, some of the biggest construction companies in the world, where the illegal aliens are operating the cranes, the dump trucks, all these good high-paying jobs. And it's a myth to say that, oh, the only thing, the illegal aliens are just picking cotton and picking berries and apples. Nobody wants those jobs. That's the biggest damn lie ever. And blacks are, you know, the average black family, some of their members haven't had a real job in 30 years. So what they do, they sit around and join gangs because no one's hiring them. I walk around and look on the telephone poles. They got wanted signs in Spanish up in Harlem, in Black Harlem, wanted signs for workers in Spanish. So that tells me that Trump has to harshly penalize American businessmen who are hiring these illegal aliens, okay?
All right, David, slow down a second. So, first of all, I think you make a lot of sense. I mean, I disagree with some of the aspects of your presentation, but I think that it's essentially fact-based. What do? Just curious.
I'm self-employed.
I mean, like what? I mean, just give me an area. Like doing what?
Shoe care business.
The shoe care business?
Yeah.
And so...
I didn't call to get my resume on the air.
I just want to know a little bit about you because you articulate a situation that that I think makes a lot of sense. You're speaking for a constituency. I disagree with, as I said, some of the aspects of what you said, but you still said it intelligently. That's what I want to know about.
Hold on. Let me say this. These people are taking jobs like electrician, plumbing, carpentry, masonry. They're not picking apples in New York City.
No, but they are picking apples also. That's where I disagree with you. The construction field is definitely, as you describe, in the New York area, almost exclusively Hispanic. All of these companies, even the companies, the old line companies owned by the Italian guys, they're hiring the Hispanics. Many of the Mexican or Guatemalan, you see them everywhere, New Jersey, New York, you see it almost anywhere. The gardening firms also, I agree with that. Where you are wrong is that's not the majority of what they do nationwide. I mean, it may be what you see, but it's not the majority of what they do nationwide.
I think that's a lie, but this is what I want to say. You know Trump.
It's not a lie, and I don't appreciate where I make a point, you say it's a lie. I'm not saying that you're a liar, so don't tell me I'm a liar. I mean, don't. I'm a far more experienced person.
They got the best damn jobs in America right now.
Well, the people that haven't had a job in 30 years, I would submit to you, David, the people who haven't had a job in 30 years, that their problem is not Hispanic labor. It is not Hispanic labor. If you haven't had a job in 30 years, that's not about the Mexicans. That's about you. Eddie in the Bronx, what's up, Eddie?
All right, Geraldo, you sound like my wife, and you say they'll do jobs we won't. They do jobs that we can't afford to do for one reason, the way they live. Have you ever, do you know any Mexicans?
I know lots of Mexicans.
How do they live when they do menial jobs? Five or six families to a house they rent. Their income is could be cheap because everybody's pooling their money together and renting a $1,000 house. It's costing them $200. And let me tell you, they're not illegal. They're getting licenses, Social Security cards. I know a few that go to Philadelphia. Their insurance is walk in, they give them a good card, and they walk out. The insurance is meaningless. Let me tell you who dropped the ball on this.
Okay.
Homeland Security. Where the hell is Homeland Security? Why? How do these guys get IDs? Answer me that.
Well, in California, an undocumented can get a driver's license, and in many other states, I don't know what the rule. I don't think they can here. Hillary tried to get that when she was New York State Senator.
I'd be nailed in a heartbeat. Nailed in. They're overlooking. This government is falling apart.
Well, let me say this. Let me agree with you on this point, and to the previous caller from what he called the Black Harlem. Also, I believe that Jeb Bush is right. The reason immigration reform advocates oppose E-Verify is that it works. In other words, you have to have a federal ID number to get a job. And if you don't have your name, if you don't have a federal ID number, you don't get the job. That works, and employers don't want it because then they'd have no plausible deniability. Well, I didn't know he was not here legally. You know, that's why E-Verify is being opposed by immigration reform advocates. That's why it is being proposed by Jeb Bush. It's very hard to argue with E-Verify. I understand that it is harsh in a sense. I understand that, you know, the vast majority of these people are law-abiding, hardworking. They want the same thing we all want. I also understand that they are a net positive to America's economy and social life. Also, a point that immigration critics refuse to accept or just, I know the numbers. The Congressional Budget Office says that each undocumented immigrant contributes more to the American Treasury than they drain from it, which is exactly the opposite of what most people generally think. Still, I understand how if you're a young, unemployed black kid, and you're looking at a construction site, and all of the construction workers on the site are from Mexico, I totally get that you would be resentful of that. I totally understand that. And therein lies the rub. We need a balance. We need a balance. We need to understand, and we need secure borders, and we have to stem the flow. But I believe that statistically, we have that there are fewer immigrants coming into the country than leaving the country right now, this moment. The Dow Jones has extended its gains today, over 400 points up now. Hopefully it will keep going. What distresses me, though, as a long-term investor, I remember this kind of volatility back in 2008, 2009. It would be up 1,000, down, you know, up 800, down 1,000, up 700, down 800, you know, it was up and down and up and down. And then the trend kept, if you watched it over a week and two and three, just kept going down and down and down. But so far, the Dow fighting back. Maybe it will make up all of yesterday's losses. But the other thing is, remember yesterday, it was down almost 1,100. Then it was down only 90-something. So it went from down 1,100 to down just 90-something. And then ended the day down almost 600. Now it's off. It's 380, 390 now. Dow up 390, which is good. One of the things that is causing a lot of I'm going to get back to your calls momentarily about the Trump and immigration and all that. But in the on the other side of the aisle, on the Democratic side, you had the White House press secretary, Josh Earnest, saying something about Joe Biden that really caused tremendous ripples, particularly when you consider that Hillary Clinton is the almost anointed Democratic candidate. The Obama White House, though, didn't take the occasion yesterday to say the president
embraces and endorses his former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. Rather, the question was about Joe Biden. And listen to what the White House press secretary said about the vice president. Yes.
The president has indicated his view that the decision that he made, I guess, 7 years ago now, to add Joe Biden to the ticket as his running mate was the smartest decision that he had ever made in politics. And I think that should give you some sense of the president's view of Vice President Biden's aptitude for the top job.
Then he went on to say that you can rest assured that the president will be making an endorsement during the Democratic primary season. In other words, the president will play a role in who the Democratic candidate is, leaving open the intriguing possibility that if the Vice President Joe Biden were to this late date, even though he's not raised a dollar or hired a single, I guess he hired one person, this lady who was John Edwards' press secretary during his failed campaign in 2008. But he could endorse Joe Biden. The president could endorse Joe Biden. So if he does, I got this thing from this guy, David Harsany, the senior editor at The Federalist. You know, very, very conservative, hard right, talking about Joe Biden and what you've forgotten about Joe Biden. You think of Joe Biden as the nice guy, the loyal sidekick to President Obama, the guy who really had the president's back. But the fact of the matter is, Joe Biden has a long record of very conservative policies. For instance, Joe Biden authored the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act of 1994. Now, why is that significant? That is significant because it expanded the number of crimes subject to the death penalty, played a pivotal role in the explosion of incarcerations and the disproportionate criminal prosecution in poor black communities. Biden wrote that law in 1994. We have this information thanks to the Federalist senior editor, David Harsanyi. So Biden wrote the crime bill that put so many black people behind bars for so long on so many new and varied charges. Those mandatory minimum laws that we all think are way excessive and harsh. The drug czar, Biden helped create that position. The drug czar, don't ask, don't tell. The Defense of Marriage Act, Biden voted for it. There's a lot to, not to mention the Iraq War. So I'm not so sure that Joe Biden, once his record gets out there, is going to be the darling of the Democrats. Just like he was not the last two times around.
I want you to clap your hands! Clap your hands! On a rock and roll night. You party every day. I want a rock and roll night. You party every day.
Yeah. Gene Simmons' birthday. Yes. How old is he? Do we know? 66. Still sticking that tongue out, still having fun, still making money. Dow holding it about 380. That's good. So I talked about how graciously I was treated on City Island on Friday. Man, oh, man. First, at the dock, it was Vinny. I got there, I forgot my wallet home, so he let me buy gas. $114 worth of gas without my wallet. Let me keep my boat there overnight. He said, hey, I got your boat. You're going to come back. I came back. But then when I came back, next door, I had to get some ice. I had to get, a few supplies. And I was treated so graciously by the people of City Island. JoJo's on the line now. Hey, JoJo.
Lisa, I was laughing yesterday. I said, you're thanking Vinny. I said, that was me with the ice and the
That was you. What's the name of your restaurant?
Lobster House. City Island Lobster House in City Island.
City Island Lobster House. It's a beautiful location.
I recommend it unreservedly.
It's a terrific place, and the hospitality was unbelievable.
I appreciate that. You see, I was getting out of my van, and I looked, and I seen you coming. I didn't expect you, but you're a regular guy, and we appreciate you, and we appreciate you as New Yorkers. You know, growing up as a kid in the Bronx, you know, I treat all my customers VIP. Everybody, and you could ask anybody that knows me. I'm City Island a long time. I started as a busboy down in Sammy's down in City Island. So I'm came a long way from Bronx boys.
Well, congratulations on your success, and I thank you again. You just were so, so nice.
I want
nice.
To say something
so
about
decent.
Mr. Trump. Could I?
Sure.
You know, I tell often customers, you know, I go around as a, you know, I'm hands on. I'm in the business. I deal with people all my life. You know, I respect Donald Trump. I think he's a good deal maker. I think he's an entrepreneur, a billionaire. But you know, I tell people, I take a step back and I go, you know, you got to represent over 100 million people. So you got to speak for everybody, not just. It's not like politics as usual. You know, you got to go, you know, from the lowest guy to the highest guy. Everybody likes to be treated VIP. And you know, maybe the country's got, everybody's got thinking a different way. They want a businessman, which is great, because that's what really gets things accomplished. And being in the trenches and relating to people and, you know.
So do you worry that he's alienating people?
You know what? It concerns me because, you know, we built this country on hard work and dedication, and not just New York, across the board. Immigrants came to this country. My grandfather, great grandfather. I mean, they built we built the country around immigrants, which is the great opportunity of America. And I don't have a problem with changes, but you got to change for everybody, and just you can't single out people. And you know, his way he speaks is not making a deal across the board where you're dealing with 6, 8, 10, 12 people. You're dealing with a big country which is concerned about economics, which we should be. I mean, I work hard in my business every day. It's not because it's about money. Everybody equates everything about money and you know, money, good karma always brings good fortune, and you got to be hardworking.
I agree with that. And, JoJo, I want to thank you again. I had a great time. Listen, I appreciate it. Not only did you give me the ice, but you gave me the case of Corona. I owe you one.
Nah, you know, that's the goodness in my heart. That's why
you got
I learned
a good
that
heart.
Trait from my mother.
You got a good heart. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And I'm good listening to you, and keep up the good work. And,
thank you.
Nice to see you.
Thank you, JoJo.
Bye-bye.
So you know where my wife is? Right now, with Sol and with Sol's cousin, Max, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, Josh and Liz's son, Max, same age, right, 10 years old, they're at Ellis Island right now. They took the tour. They took the subway down from 96th Street and Lex. They took the subway down. They went on the tour boat to Ellis Island. They're looking up all of our various ancestors and relatives who came in through Ellis Island. You know, Ellis Island open to the European immigrants, and they're looking up the Freedmans and the Malavans and, you know, the Levies, all of the that side of the family who came. They're looking at the Riveras, although most of my Riveras went from the Canary Islands. I never told you this story. So my grandfather, Juan, who lived to be 99, fathered the 17 children with Tomasa. He came from the Canary Islands. The Canary Islands are off the coast of Africa, a Spanish territory. So the family originally from Spain moves to the Canary Islands and from the Canary Islands to Puerto Rico. The Canary Islands, of course, are African. I mean, they're in the continent of Africa. So I guess you could say that I have African-American roots, too. I'm not kidding. I mean, I really do. But I mean, just to the whole immigrant experience and the potpourri, the mosaic, and David Dinkins' old expression, or the stew, or whatever you call it, this glorious amalgam that makes up the American people, the American race. Nothing like hybrid vigor. No nation can compete with us. We have the most creative people, and we're attracting the most creative, energetic, hardworking people. The challenge for whoever leads us now into deeper into the 21st century is to make it work, to make it work in an equitable way for everyone who is here, who has been here. We don't want people being disadvantaged by the newcomers either. But these are things that can be managed, I believe. The question is which of our various leaders can do the managing. I don't want to. I want to get to. Well, let me take Vinny, and then I'll move on. Here's Vinny, not the Vinny from City Island. This Vinny's from New Jersey. What's up, Vinny? What are you thinking about? Hello, Vinny. You there? Hey, Vinny.
Hi.
Hey, you. Hey,
yes.
What's up?
Listen, Geraldo, you and others, Trump presented an immigration plan in his campaign and had four or five very good points, but you and others in the media are only picking up on his deportation of 11 million. You're not paying attention to the things that he can do without any new laws. Number one, he said he's going to enforce the E-Verify program, which will stop these employees.
And that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Right.
I think that's a, you know, it's a, the people who are in favor of leniency oppose E-Verify because E-Verify works. I'm honest about
right.
it. I know that it works.
In addition, let me say, he also said he's going to increase border agents and give them the authority to actually enforce existing laws. Now, the other thing we can catch these people, and when they apply for programs which were designed for American citizens and they fill out these applications, that's how we catch these illegals. We all know it's impractical. You're not going to go banging doors and get rid of 11 million people. But the same way we have speeding laws, you can't catch every speeder, but when you catch them, you can do it.
Don't you see a difference between someone who's just here working and someone who's a criminal alien? I mean, shouldn't there be priorities?
No, Ralph, because I'm a contractor, all right? I can't do roofing anymore because these people are working under the books. And we're not only talking about Mexicans. We're talking about the illegal, and I don't call them immigrants. I call them invaders. They're coming and they're working under the table. They're killing us. We who are born in America, I'm 43 years in business. There's so many jobs I can do, and I've sent pictures to John McCain. I dig ditches. I'm 76 years old. I'm still on a roof. You ridiculed me a couple of months ago when I called, right?
I ridiculed you for being 76? You must have been somebody else.
We cannot compete.
Why would I ridicule you? Wait, you can't say something like that. I didn't ridicule you.
Yeah, I told you I was going up on a roof in Morristown. And he says, oh, good luck, Vinny. You cut me off. So I hope you don't fall off the roof. All right?
But anyway, no way. I didn't say that. That's not me.
He can enforce, he can reverse the DREAM Act by the same executive order that Obama created it. And he can do these things with existing laws. We don't need immigration reform. We need enforcement of existing immigration laws.
I got you.
Now,
all right.
Please, you know.
How much longer are you going to keep going up on that roof? I don't know how much longer I can keep going up on the roof.
Stop dwelling on this phony thing of the breaking down doors and enforcing.
Well, if it's a phony thing, why is he saying it? Why is he saying it if it's a phony thing? If he doesn't mean it, why is he saying it?
You're not dwelling on the other 4 points of the program.
This is pretty dramatic, Vinny. If he doesn't mean it, why is he saying it?
Because you're not paying attention to the other four. If you enforce the other four things the other 4 points.
I got it, Vinny. Thank you.
I got it.
Want to wish Regis Philbin a happy 84th birthday. So the 76-year-old roofer has to take a back seat to 84-year-old Regis Philbin. He's on the Today Show with Kathy Lee and Hoda. He's great, wonderful guy. Just one of the most pleasant people, positive energy when he enters the room. You know, the train attack, there's a follow-up now on the train attack. I want to give you when I still have the chance. You know, the attacker, the guy El Kazani, who was subdued by the three heroic Americans and the fourth, the French-American Marc Mugallian, who's still hospitalized with a gunshot wound. He got shot in the back. He was actually the French-American guy was the first guy on El Kazani, and then the three Americans jumped on and managed to subdue him after the perpetrator shot this Mark in the back. But El Kazani was found to have not only the AK-47, the assault rifle, but 270 rounds of ammo, the 9mm handgun, a box cutter, and a bottle of gasoline. As he went through
the train car. It would have been an absolute bloodbath, but for the heroic action of the Americans. Just amazing. So El-Khazani, I thought it was a real chutzpah when it comes to a legal defense. But what El-Khazani said is that he had just found a bag of weapons the night before in a park in Brussels, and he planned to use the weapons to rob the passengers. So here's a guy, a terrorist, who's saying, oh, no, he's not a terrorist. He's just a thief, an armed robber. That defense fell apart early today when they searched El-Khazani's cell phone. And it turns out that the guy, just before he launched this ultimately thwarted attack, on his phone watched an online video from the jihadis, from the jihadist, the radical Islamist website, the ISIS website, to get himself juiced up before he then kind of went to act out his jihad on the train, to be thwarted and beaten righteously, beaten by the Americans, hogtied, and ultimately wrestled down with minimal damage done. So just a shout out again to the three heroic Americans, the four really, with Mouglian, Mark Mouglian, the French American, and also a British businessman jumped in. That's what you have to do. As I leave you today, and I thank you very much for listening. As I leave you today, that's the lesson I have for everybody. I don't care if you're 76, if you're 84, if you're 14. When you have a rampage, a terrorist on the rampage, surrender is not an option, because that will only encourage. It's just like a bully in high school. If you let them go, they're gonna be worse and worse. You've got to stand up. All of us have to stand together. Not just see something, say something. It's see something, do something. Just like these Americans did that received the Legion of Honor for their heroic actions on board that train. You see something, do something. Thanks a lot for listening. I get that a lot of you, most of you, disagree with my immigration stance, but know that it is sincerely felt on my point. I'm just as sincere as you all are, and I appreciate you listening, and I love you. See you tomorrow.